The views and opinions expressed in the Distracted Librarians podcast do not necessarily reflect those of Bloomfield Township, Bloomfield Township Public Library, Bloomfield Community Television, the Birmingham Area Cable Board, or its producers or production staff.
Hello and welcome. We're the Distracted Librarians, your friendly neighborhood bookworms who can't resist the siren call of movies, video games, music, and everything else in the pop culture universe.
Think of this podcast as a digital campfire where we share our latest obsessions, analyze the hidden depths of our favorite distractions, and maybe rediscover the joy of reading in between.
So, if you're a fellow media junkie, a book lover, or someone looking for a fun, engaging escape from your daily grind, you've come to the right place.
Sit back, relax, and prepare to get delightfully distracted with us.
Hello, everybody. Today we are going to be talking about changes in reading taste. Changes in reading taste, what do you guys think?
I like when we start by describing what we mean.
I like that, too.
So I was thinking about this. Like, is it, I have a note in my own mind of, like, is it us that changes, or is it the books themselves that change? Because I think that we had brought up, just amongst ourselves, something really interesting, that there have been a lot of different genres and topics and tastes that have changed, even in like the last several years.
Sure, things that are popular now that didn't even exist when we were young readers, that kind of thing, for
sure. Or at least weren't categorized the same way.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So how we read, like, do you guys have a preference in like the format that you use generally?
I used to be like only physical books.
A book purist. Yeah, same.
Yeah. When I was teenager mostly, I could not function with ebooks and audiobooks. I didn't learn to do audiobooks until I went to college and had a 2-hour drive and needed to fill that time somehow.
Sure.
And I didn't learn to like enjoy an ebook until I was working at the desk and couldn't have a physical book.
Oh, yeah.
So there was always like a catalyst that got me to embrace the new thing. But once it was in, it's in.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't start doing audiobooks until I had a CD player in my car.
Same.
Which was not until grad school. So I, and looking back, I'm like, I wish I had audiobooks in college. I might have read more of my English major books.
No.
I might
not
have.
Not how that would have worked.
But now it's like, I do audiobooks all the time. Even though I only have like a 20-minute drive, I'm still on the way to and from work listening to audiobooks.
I had an argument with a discussion with my English teacher in high school of saying, like, it's not literature if it's not in print format, which is the same. Like, and now looking back on that, I find that such an embarrassing thing that I said, because it was a very narrow perspective, obviously, on what you know, a book is or what a narrative is. But it was the same thing. Like, when I was a kid, I only read books in print. And when I was a teenager, I only read books in print. And it was the same thing, Killian. It was not until I went to college that my car had a CD player, and I was changing CDs like at the red lights to listen to The Return of the Native or whatever it was. And so, and that was my first introduction to like books in a different format.
Well, let's be honest, audiobooks in the physical format were extremely expensive. I used to work in a bookstore. If you were going to buy an audiobook, those things were like $75 for like a package of CDs, which was just not going to happen as a young person for me. No. There was just absolutely no way.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could get them from the library, but it just wasn't at the forefront of my, that wasn't going to be my selected reading format. So when I did start getting into audiobooks, I was like, this is the best thing ever, because I can read like 2 books at one time. I can be listening to a book, and I can be physically reading another book, and I can keep everything straight.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. Besides that, I had a commute, and it's like a wonderful thing when like you have this crappy commute every single day where you're like, I'm in a car very early in the morning, not where I want to be, but you like teleport. because you just like look up one at one moment and you're at the library. Yes. How wonderful is
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
And you just like got to digest a little bit of entertainment on your way.
I don't know. My favorite audiobooks, like my favorite books, I have physical audiobooks of them. I have the MP3 CDs of mm-hmm. the Leigh Bardugo books. Nice. But they have a tendency to hit me with the most emotional thing right as I get where I'm going, every time.
We were just like, talking about this, like screaming or crying in the car on your way here, and people, I always wonder if like people are watching or paying attention, like you're at a stoplight, and like, oh, what's that lady doing?
You're like, are they okay? Like,
no.
And it's never on your way home when you have time to decompress. It is always this painful realization thing has happened at 8:57, and my shift starts at 9.
Yes, and you can't sit in your car any longer and figure it out.
So you scream over Messenger to your friend as you walk into the library. Why has it done it to me again?
Yes.
So what do you guys think about our e-books? Anybody do e-books?
Love them.
Same.
I think it has a place, definitely. There are good times for e-books.
For me, it's functional. It's the same thing. I'll use it. I'll read an ebook at the desk, you know, and that's about the only time.
Okay.
I primarily was like, computer screen. I would do some books on my phone, but then I got an actual like dedicated e-reader. I wouldn't use my iPad because it was heavy, and I have terrible wrists. But then I got my Paperwhite, and I'm like, oh, I can read these anytime.
And I think I would enjoy it more if I had a designated device that did that. But I'm like, I remember like scrolling on my phone, reading like one page at a time, feeling like ebooks are so inconvenient.
Oh yeah, on a phone.
Because horrible. It's like, well, genius, you're not using the designated device to display it in an enjoyable way. Like so.
Yeah.
But
these days, a lot of my reading is either Kindle Unlimited or NetGalley eArcs.
Okay.
So either way, it's only available digitally.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I've learned to embrace it real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, I've done a lot of NetGalley as well, which is cool because then it's like things that aren't out yet. So it's the things I'm looking forward to that I then get to read early.
It feels so elite.
Nice. All right. So let's talk about some things, as we mentioned earlier, that are available now that weren't available before. So, like, I'm thinking romanticy, I don't know, what other kind of topics. There's, like, this really cool group of mythological fiction series that are coming out. And they're not even necessarily series, but, like, I don't know. I feel like you could all lump them together in one big pile and say, this is mythological fiction.
It's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, the, like, Jennifer Saints and the Claire Haywoods of the world.
Yes.
I will say, I think a lot of that, it's not so much that it's anything new. It's just being marketed differently, with the rise of like book stuff on social media, on Instagram, on TikTok, you get a lot of those conversations, and people like having little quippy things to be able to say. It's a lot easier to say romanticy quickly than it is to say romantic fantasy or fantasy romance or anything like that.
And it's been around forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I've read Laurel K. Hamilton. You know, that stuff is back in the day, same idea. It's just now it's being popularized and it's been made a better marketable product, right?
And Legends and Lattes didn't invent cozy fantasy.
No, but it's so good.
But
so cozy.
It did bring it back to the forefront.
Yeah.
And it gave it a genre name that was just a nab before.
Perfect. What about game-related fiction?
There's so much right now. There's, especially in kids, every year Scholastic puts out like a paperback that is somehow video game-related, and it's always one of the things that I book talk because kids like video games, and so reading about video games is an easier way to draw them into reading a book. Mm-hmm. And I haven't found this year's yet. I still need to do that. But then there's also this rise in kids' stuff about TTRPGs and Dungeons and Dragons and things like that. That's also just a lot of fun. And it's really cool to be able to tie into these trends that are outside the book world with things that are coming out in books so that it's an easier way for us to be able to hand things to kids.
Totally.
Like, you might like this if.
And you see it in other forms of media, too. The Last of Us TV show exploded. They're making a Halo show now.
Okay.
all kinds of things leading into recognizing that video games have good stories to tell.
Sure.
And bringing them into other formats to expand them.
Definitely.
I was just going to say that same thing, Drew, where I think that some of the most successful or the most memorable games that I remember as a kid, there was a story playing out. And I think that there is so much like cross-pollination, for lack of a better term, of like different genres and the way that they're approaching what they're trying to do. So like the video game is trying to tell the story. The film is trying to tell the story. The music is trying to tell the story. And so these are all, and the way that we, the media is connected now, everything can kind of interact with, in some capacity, everything else. Mm-hmm. And so become influenced. Because if you know a little bit of this, you know a little bit of that. So like you said, Killian, like, oh, well, if you really enjoy this, you might really enjoy this book or this, you know, graphic novel or whatever. There is a lot of that referencing intermixed now, which I think is initially kind of confusing to get your head around, but it's also so cool.
It also creates like these awesome obsession sort of situations. Yes. Because you're like,
definitely,
hey, I really like Minecraft. Mm-hmm. So what's out there for Minecraft? Well, it's not just the game. It's like I can go to Target and buy a Minecraft shirt and Minecraft shoes. And I can read about Minecraft and I can play a game that's about like a board game that's about Minecraft. And there's just like all of this cross marketing that's happening. And it just makes people like want all of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And video games are the thing that really made me take a look at actually who I am as a reader, because I was like, I love books, I love reading. And then I would get really into games and be like, I don't want to spend all this time playing video games because I also want to read, because that's such a huge part of my identity. And then I realized that it wasn't necessarily, I love reading, but I also love playing video games. But the overarching thing is that I love a good story.
Yeah.
And so I love a good story in any format, whether it's a movie, whether it's a video game, whether it's a book, whether it's a board game or a tabletop game. Mm-hmm. I just want good stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe you don't have to choose between one or the other.
And I think there's something to be said for that. I think we, as a society, like to put certain medias above others.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
As like, this is the height of like intellectual, and this is, you know, very
lowbrow.
Yeah. And it's like, you can get good stories across all that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I read less, but I find better stories elsewhere too.
Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that your reading tastes have changed over time?
So I used to be super, super into like only reading fantasy books. Mm-hmm. And I still love fantasy. But I have a harder time, because I have less time to read, I have a harder time with the thicker fantasies that spend the first 100-150 pages on the world building.
Oh, yeah.
Those are still some of my favorite books from when I was younger. And, you know, the ones that I will put on a pedestal and reread sometimes and be obsessed with. But it's harder for me to embrace new ones because I don't have the time dedication to not get to the plot until day four.
Right. right.
So that's always been something that I, not always, but that's been something that I want more in my life, but don't really have the emotional bandwidth for.
Okay. Gotcha. Killian, what about you?
Kind of the same. I've always been big into fantasy. I also have, but I'm also such a mood reader anyway, and I always have been. Before I had the words to say that.
And before we knew what to call it.
Oh, hey, I go through phases where I'm very into a genre or a format or a type of story. Mm-hmm. And then I move on to a different one, but I end up coming back. I was into the romances that were out a lot when I was in college. There, I would read some of, like, at the time it was mostly marketed as women's fiction. Mm-hmm. And I would read that and okay. And then I moved on to something else and was very big into something else for a while. And now I am back to a lot of the romances that are coming out. Mm-hmm. It's so cyclical. I don't feel like, oh, I've given up this thing and I'm never going to go back to it, because I don't dislike it. I just, that's not the mood I'm in now. Mm-hmm. So
sure.
I'll come back to it at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And it's cool because then I can go back and reread things that it's like, oh, I had wanted to read this. Mm-hmm. but I didn't get a chance to, or I read this when I was in high school, and what does it look like now that I'm in my 30s?
Which can be completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Emily?
I read more current, like, recent publications than I used to ever. Well, and for two reasons. One, because I actually have access to, like, what's coming out? What is the actual... Because being a librarian is different than being, obviously, like, you know, just the person who goes to the library. And oftentimes, patrons are far more aware of what's going out than I am. I find that I'm reading more, so I can do better reader's advisory, so I can be more aware of, and I'm reading more recent material or new material, and I don't enjoy that process as much as I feel like I should. I remember really clearly when I was in college, I would go to my public library, and I would go, and I would just go to the shelves, and I would just grab, like, a stack of books, like, oh, this looks interesting, this looks interesting. Mm-hmm. I would just pull things out kind of at random and just get a stack and be like, well, these are the stories I have, let's explore them. And it was one of the happiest times that I ever had as a reader, because it felt almost like fate, like, it's gonna be this, like, oh, yeah. And now I'm more intentional about, like, what can I read that I can better share with other people? Mm-hmm. And I think I have a little bit of imposter syndrome, because that's not my reading style. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like, I'm a mood reader too. Like, and so it's not as much my style. I don't feel as good at it. It feels more like a chore that I am not equipped for.
Okay.
Than that I don't like the material itself, but it just is sort of like, oh.
And I do just want to really quickly say that reader's advisory is a term that we use in libraries.
Yes.
As librarians. And basically it just means, like, when a patron comes into the library and asks, hey, I need help finding books that I would be interested in. Mm-hmm. Our job is reader's advisory. We advise them and we help them find the books that they're looking for.
Yes.
Just wanted to mention that.
Because
that's like librarian speak.
Yeah.
That doesn't really exist in the real world.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
No, my book club has been huge for that for me, because I know that every year I will be reading 11 books that I probably wouldn't have picked otherwise.
Yeah.
And I do pick the books for the book club, but I pick them based on general fiction, things that were really popular,
right,
things that our other groups are reading. So I have a better handle on general recommendations,
right?
Specifically for that, because my reading is probably often not something that's, you know, in the library, because a lot of it's Kindle Unlimited,
right?
But also just not books that are for everyone.
Sure.
And similar to that, like, my experience in reading mostly has been in, like, stories written by people long dead. So it's like, so that, like, priority is. That's where I feel really comfortable. Like, someone came up and was like, do you know anything about poetry? And I was like, yes, sure do. Like, but so I feel very, very strong in some areas. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, I know, like, four things really, really, really well.
Sure.
If it's outside of that, I'm like, I've never read a book before. And I don't know why I feel that way, because it's like, I don't know.
Well, it's like librarian guilt in a way. Like, mm-hmm. when you're kind of like, this is my job. This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed mm-hmm. to be really good at it.
Yeah.
But also, like, do I want to read all these other books that aren't actually part of what my interest is?
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially being in youth, because I do like reading kids' books. There are some great books out there that are written for kids. I have favorites from my childhood. I have new favorites. But I also want to read things that are written for teens and for adults and, other things.
Yeah. How do you take the little bit of time that you have and still, like, keep yourself happy and also do a good job
as
a librarian? Right?
So, like, we every year go into the schools at the end of the school year and do book talks to, the elementary and early middle schoolers. And it's like, okay, I have to go in with this amount of time of books to talk about. And I used to only talk about things that I had read, and then I wasn't able to spend time reading other things that I wanted to read. And that was a lot easier when I was on an award committee, too, because I had to read them for that. But now it's like, I have figured out, one, how to DNF a book, which I did not know how to, like, just put a book down and not finish it.
Which means do not finish, or did not finish.
Yeah.
And I've learned how to do that in the last probably maybe decade, probably more realistically, like, 5 years.
Yeah, that was something I never did before either.
It's so hard. So, yeah. It was a very difficult thing for me to DNF a book. Because I'm like, it has to be atrociously awful for me to say, I am not going to finish this. But I'm like, I just don't have the time. I've got 15 other books sitting here, and I know one of those is going to be great.
Yeah, so I've already lost the time that I've put into this.
Yes.
Do I need to put in more?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, my Goodreads did not finish shelf is still only 4 books. It would probably be longer if I weren't, like, dedicated to not giving up on things. Like, I have a book that I'm about 150 pages into, and I read page 150 in, I think, March of last year.
Oh.
And it's still sitting on my currently reading list. Like,
oh my goodness.
I'll get to it someday.
Yeah.
The bookmark is still in the book. I put it back on my bookshelf.
Yeah.
I abandoned it to that extent, but the bookmark is still there. I'll get back to it someday.
Look, don't look at the dates on my currently reading shelf. If they're still there, I intend to go back to them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What about you, Nicole?
Well, I went from reading Stephen King in fourth grade to reading Stephen King as an adult.
Consistency.
So things haven't changed that much. But because of my job, and we kind of discussed this, now I have to, like, divvy up my time between horror and mythology and reading children's books, which is not a bad thing. It is really not. I feel like there are so many awesome books out there for younger audiences, like, to the extent that I'm almost jealous. Like, I wish that there were these many awesome and wonderful books when I was a kid. Trust me, I had no problem finding things to read, but, like, I'm looking at the topics and the content of these novels and things that are available, and I'm just like, wow, this is such an awesome time to be alive and a young person, right?
Yeah. I think kids' books these days actually respect kids more than they did when we were kids.
I was going to say that, yeah. I mean, representation alone, like, I think in the genesis of own voices, like people telling their own stories in their own ways,
absolutely,
is something that was much, much, much harder to find.
Sure. I mean, it was almost impossible to find a person of color in a book when I was growing up.
Literally, just if Rick Riordan Presents existed 10 years earlier, I would have been a completely different reader.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, as a parent, you know, I like checking out things that my girls are interested in. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those parents that will read the book before I hand it over to them.
My mom was that way.
Just so that I know, like, I know what this is about. If you have any questions, you know, let me know. I'm good to go. Mom is cool.
Yeah.
Just so you remember that throughout your life. But
my mom did that, and I did think my mom was cool.
Oh, good.
So, yeah.
So I'm actually doing it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I always thought my mom was... it was a way that I always knew I could go to her for, like, you know...
Sure.
Like, she was on like, my team, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. And then, you know, being in college. So when we were in college, we had to read a bunch of stuff we didn't want to read. I know we've all been there.
Yes.
So there was, like, a decade of sadness. Now that I'm older and I can do whatever I want, I'm like, well, I have to, like, put this book in there because that's going to make me feel really happy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really good at balancing, like, work books, books that I have to read to make me happy, and then kid stuff in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I always got, like, a handful of books going at once.
Yeah.
And that's the joy of multiple formats being out now, is, like, I always have an audiobook in my car. I have an audiobook on my phone. I have several ebooks going. I have usually only one or two print books at a time because otherwise they're on the shelf so I don't trip over them constantly, or so the cats don't eat them because they chew everything. But yeah, people are like, how do you read so many books at a time? And I'm like, I don't know. I just do.
Yeah.
It works.
It's an occupational hazard.
Yeah.
Well, it's who I always was, and it's funny. When I was a kid, I always had a bedroom book and a family room book and a basement book.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm older, I'll have a print book, ebook, audiobook.
I love that.
So
that's awesome.
The way that it exists changes, but
there's someone everywhere.
I've been who I am
but
for 30 years.
But the tendency remains, yes. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was the kid who would take, like, 3 books in the car for, like, an hour-long drive.
Oh, same, yeah.
So it's not surprising to me that I read a bunch of different things at once. I don't have the attention span to just be like, I am going to sit and read this one book until I finish it if it's going to take multiple days. I will sit and read one book through in a day on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those days are really nice.
I love that.
I do too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Distracted Librarians.
If you have any questions or suggestions, feel free to reach out to us at distracted@btpl.org.
Until then, keep those pages turning and those screens lighting up.
We'll catch you in the next episode.